Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Rosh Hashanah Daf Lamed. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the bottom line of Daf Chof Tes Amid Beis. The Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, which was dealing with the topic of the blowing of the shofar on Shabbos. In our previous shiur, we discussed why it is forbidden, or what is the basis, what's the source for the non-blowing of the shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. In today's shiur, we open up with a comment made by Rav Huna, starting with the quote from the Mishnah where the Rabbanan responded to Rebbe Elazar in the Mishnah, who said that the Takonas Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was limited to Yavne. They said, and we read on the bottom line of the Gemara, Omru lo echod Yavne, the echod kol mokoyim shiesh bo beisdin, whether it's Yavne, which was the seat of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, or it is any other place that there is a beisdin, there will be shofar blowing on Shabbos. Now, before we can begin the Gemara itself, we must pay attention to a structural phenomenon, and this you can see on the side under the Mivneh heading. A bow tie shape appears with Roman numerals 1 and 2 in the Gemara. These represent Shnei Lishonois, two versions. Alma Oma Rav Huna es Devorov, regarding what did Rav Huna say his comment V'im Beisdin. So at this point, we have something that seems a bit obscure. Rav Huna makes a comment, Ve'im Beisdin. The Gemara will analyze what is meant by that. And as far as the structure, as we said, there are two versions as to what that statement is attached to, what he, Rav Huna, made this comment on. What did he say regarding what did he say this? So just get a bird's eye view of the Gemara before we begin the actual reading. We have Roman numeral number 1 right here at the very end of Chof Tes Omid Beis. And on Lamed Omid Aleph, you will notice a bow tie on the third wide line of the Gemara. The actual second version begins on the first wide line of the Gemara. And that's why we have a Roman numeral number 2 based over there, where the second version begins. Rav Huna's name appears on the third wide line in the second version. So now, we pick up the Gemara, the last two words of Chof Tes Amid Beis, Omar Rav Huna. We continue at the top of Daf Lamed Omer Aleph, V'im Beisdin. It is V'im Beisdin that we blow on Shabbos. My V'im Beisdin, what is meant by that term? Answer, B'fnei Beisdin, in the presence of Beisdin. La'afuke, to the exclusion of Sheloi B'fnei Beisdin Delo, that if you have, of course, a Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, and you're not in the presence of the Beis Din, so then there can be no shofar blowing on Shabbos. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei. Ma Kavonas Rav Huna, what is the intent of Rav Huna? Beha di Omar Legabi Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, the Toikinim Beis Din. That there will be shofar blowing in Beis Din, and that's what Rav Huna said. Hainu, the Toikim, and in this part of the Gemara, this first Loshon, we see it means the Toikim b'fnei Beis Din, that we blow in the presence of Beis Din, the Beis Din being the court. La'afuke shelo b'fnei Beis Din, to the exclusion of a case or a situation where you're not in the presence of Beis Din on a Shabbos, so then there will be no shofar blowing. Now, there's a a marking that we have employed over here. You see that the word lafuke is in a diamond. The reason we have this is that in the next Lashon, we also have this same structure. And in Gemara markings, we often try to highlight structure similarities that you find in a sugya. So that in the second Lashon, you'll also see Rav Huna's comment, and he makes the comment to the exclusion of something else. And there, again, you will see a diamond. So the word lafuke was highlighted for structural purposes, structural balance. And another marking that will appear very shortly is a, you'll see a double underline used. And this is explained on the side, shlavim, these are stages, lahazbir, mahu, oid yitaron, liushalayim al yavne. What is an additional special feature or advantage that Jerusalem has over Yavne? Noisaf aho dekotoni b'mishnah. Beyond that which the Mishnah teaches. Now, in the Mishnah itself, the language was a bit difficult on a first read-through, where the Mishnah, about halfway down the Mishnah, back on Chof Tesmet Beis, said, V'oid zois oisa Yerushalayim Yisrael Yavne, and this, an additional advantage that Jerusalem had over Yavne regarding blowing the shofar on Shabbos, shekol ir shiroya v'shamas ukrov v'yichol lovo tokin v'yavne loho yitokin al beis in bilvad, which brings you to the end of the Mishnah. But the Mishnah is telling you that there is an additional advantage that Jerusalem has over Yavne regarding surrounding communities that can also blow on Shabbos, whereas that advantage did not exist with regard to Yavne. But language, linguistically or grammatically, when you say v'oid zos, and an additional advantage, so there must have been some prior advantage that was already stated. But when you look in the Mishnah, you don't see that. So that is what the Gemara is going to be trying to figure out, and that's what we have marked off in with the double underline. It's stages to try to understand what's the additional advantage that Jerusalem has over Yavne. Now, this is all part of a scheme, though, in the structure of the Gemara. A question is being developed. And fortunately for the markings, we have a long question marking. So you can see that all of this is going to be a question on the conclusion we just reached in the name of Rav Huna, that there will be no shofar blowing unless you're in the presence of Beis Din. At the end of the long question, we're going to come out saying that even if you're not in the presence of Beis Din, there still will be shofar blowing on Shabbos. So now, with the structure hopefully clear, let's take a look at the text. Long question. Mosiv Rava. Rava raises a question, which we won't see till the end of the long question, on that which we just said, that there is no shofar blowing unless you're in the presence of Beis Din. So Rava asks, the Mishnah says, V'oid zois hois Yerushalayim Yisrael Yavne, v'chulei, etc. And the general topic of the additional advantage Jerusalem had over Yavne involved the surrounding communities and their ability to blow on Shabbos, which was not the case in Yavne. My v'oid zois. What do you mean by this additional advantage? B'leimo kedikotoni, if you are suggesting the Mishnah to be read as it is, well then zois mebayalei, then the lashon of the Mishnah, the expression of the Mishnah should have been, this is the advantage that Jerusalem has over Yavne. Why does it say v'od zos, that this is an additional advantage? Ela, debirushalayim toikim yichidim, ubiYavne ein toikim yichidim. Maybe this is the advantage, that in Jerusalem, people that are private individuals, yichidim, they're not shluchei Beis Din. They're not court agents. Private people blow on Shabbos when Shabbos coincides with Rosh Hashanah. Ubiyavne, and when it comes to Yavne, only the court agents will blow and not private people. The Gemara rejects that, though. Ubi Yavne ain't toikin yechidim. Could you possibly say that? V'ha ki also Rav Yitzchok bar Yosef Omar, when Rav Yitzchok came, he told us ki mesayim shlicha de tzibur tkiyo biyavne, when the shliach tzibur, the appointed, the communal baal tokea, the communal shofar blower, finished his shofar blowing, lo shama inish kol une, a person would not hear his own voice, mikol tkuei dechidoi, from the sound of the shofar blowings of all the private individuals. So there was extensive private shofar blowing in Yavne. So to say that Jerusalem's added feature over Yavne is that only in Jerusalem were private people entitled to blow shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, that's not so. Elolav, here we have already an additional stage. What's that additional advantage that was not stated in the Mishnah? Debu Shalayim, Toikin, Bain Bizman Bezdin, Ubain Shalo Bizman Bezdin. The term Bizman Bezdin means the hours that court is generally in session, and the court is generally in session from morning till Sheish Shos, till sixth hour of the day, till noon. So that in Jerusalem, the shofar blowing would take place Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, whether it's the Zman Bezdin, or the morning hours, Ubein Shalom Bezman Bezdin, even after Bezdin went home. Ube Yavne, Bezman Bezdin in, when it comes to Yavne only in the morning hours, Shalom Bezman Bezdin lo, but after Bezdin goes home, no more shofar blowing. Shabbos Rosh Hashanah. Ha Bezman Bezdin, but if you are at the time of Bezdin, Miha Toikin Vafilu Shilo Bifnei Bezdin. This is the conclusion of the question. It would appear that if, as long as you're in the right hours, the morning hours, shofar blowing can take place even if you're not in the presence of Bezdin. What did Rav Huna say at the top, where we have the diamond? Rav Huna's comment was meant to exclude a shofar blowing not in the presence of Bezdin. What do we see here? As long as you're in the morning hours, there can be shofar blowing not in the presence of Beis Din. Hence the question. The Gemara rejects this. Loi. That's not how to describe the advantage of Jerusalem over Yavne. Rather, de'ilu, b'Yerushalayim, and we have another double underline here. The Gemara focuses on what the advantage Jerusalem is over Yavne, de'ilu, b'Yerushalayim, toikin bein b'fnei beisin, bein shalo b'fnei beisin. With regard to Jerusalem, shofar blowing can take place even not in the presence of the court. Ubi Yavne b'fnei beisin in, shalo b'fnei beisin lo. And in Yavne, the shofar blowing must be in the presence of the court, but not outside of that. However, what we see here is that all shofar blowing, even if it's not in the presence of Beis Din, that's something that you can see originally when Rav Huna says that there's no shofar blowing if you're not in the presence of Beis Din. That, in fact, is the case. We are left with that. It's in Jerusalem, so there was blowing Bein B'fnei Basin, Bein Shiloh B'fnei Basin, but in Yavne, it had to be in the presence of the court. Just like Rav Huna had explained, that if you're not in the presence of the court, there can be no shofar blowing. So, to go over what we've just said, and we should also point out an additional marking feature that we didn't mention before, we spoke about the diamonds that we have to show the balance in the Lashonos, but in addition to that, we've also used the diamond to highlight where the question comes to a head. So, we thought that we were challenging Rav Huna, who had said that there will be no shofar blowing in Yavne and other Beis Din places when you are Shelo Bifnei Beis Din. In our question, we thought that when you are in Yavne and other Beis Din type places, there will be shofar blowing even Shelo Bifnei Beis Din. The Gemara then answered, no. When it comes to Yavne and places like that other than Jerusalem, only Bifnei Basin will shofar blowing take place. Jerusalem, on the other hand, has the advantage of shofar blowing taking place even Shiloh Bifnei Basin. But Rav Huna, of course, was not describing Jerusalem. He was describing Yavne and other places where a Beis Din is present. So that, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, there are two advantages Jerusalem has. And one is blowing Shiloh Bifnei Beis Din, and the other has to do with the surrounding areas that are included in the heter of blowing shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah. We continue in the Gemara. Iko demasni laha de Rav Huna aho. Aho dichtiv. There are those that teach Rav Huna's comment of ve'im based in on the following pasuk. The following pasuk deals with the blowing of shofar on Yom Kippur of the Yovel year, of the 50th year of the Jubilee cycle. And the pasuk says, b'yom ha-kippurim taviru shofar b'chol artzichem. And the pasuk says the shofar will be blown b'chol artzichem, throughout your land. Melamed, this teaches us shekol yochid v'yochid chayav l'skoya. It shows us that individuals are expected to blow the shofar on Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. We've seen in previous sugyas the significance of the shofar blowing of the Yovel year, which is associated with the freedom of slaves and the returning of lands to original owners. But for our purposes, we're focusing right now on the actual shofar blowing. Omar Rav Huna, Ve'im Beisdin. So you, in this version, you have Rav Huna and his comment of Ve'im Beisdin attached to the issue of the Yovel Yom Kippur shofar blowing. My Ve'im Beisdin, what does Rav Huna mean when he says Ve'im Beisdin? Answer, Bizman Basedin. It's a reference to the time. To have the shofar blowing limited to the presence of the court, that we cannot say over here, because the pasuk itself says, Bechol Artzachem, throughout the land. So what limitation is left? The limitation that's left will be in the realm of time, timing. So Rav Huna says, you might be blowing it throughout your land, but it has to be Bizman Basedin. La Fuke, to the exclusion of Shaloi Bizman Basedin Deloi. That in the afternoon hours, there will be no shofar blowing. Before we continue, we have a topic heading, and where we've written, Lefi Lishna Ashniya, Rav Huna koy al tkiyas yovel biyom kippur. As far as the second version of Rav Huna, he is attached to the issue of shofar blowing on yovel of yom kippur. The chol yochid chayev l'skoya, that individuals are obligated to blow the shofar on that occasion. Rav Huna omar de'im beisdin haynu bizman beisdin. Rav Huna says that the blowing of shofar on Yom Kippur of the Yovel year shall be at the time the basin would ordinarily sit in session. Time, it means in the morning hours, but not in the presence of basin. Now here the structure is a little more elaborate than the previous lashon. Here we'll have two questions raised in the course of the Gemara against what Rav Huna said, and they're indicated with triangles. Kushas al Rav Huna. The double underline will be used again in this lashon, and they are shlavei birur mahu ishu beso. We're going to see an expression ishu beso, and in order to figure out what that means, we'll go through a few stages. Now we turn to the Gemara. Rav Huna just told us with regard to the shofar blowing of Yovel Yom Kippur, there will be no blowing Shiloh Bizman Basin, if you will, afternoon hours. Mosiv Rava. So Rava raises a question. Tkias Yovel Doiches Shabbos Bigvulin Ishu Besoi. The blowing of shofar on Yovel, Yom Kippur of Yovel, supersedes Shabbos. Bigvulin means outside Yerushalayim. Ishu Beso. My Ishu Beso. What is meant by that? If the word beso you are to take to mean one's wife, man and wife, That can't be. Itza mi mechaiva. Itza is a woman. Is a woman obligated in shofar blowing? For mitzvah saseh shazman gromahi. This is a positive command which is time bound. V'chol mitzvah saseh shazman groma noshim pturos. We know from the sugi and kiddushin, maseches kiddushin, that positive mitzvahs that are time bound, women are exempt from such mitzvahs. And a shofar blowing on a specific holiday is something that's time bound. It's bound to that date. So women are exempt. So what does the source mean that said kias yovel is ish ubeso? Elo lav ish bebeso. It must mean a person in his house, v'afilu sheloi bizman beisdin, even at a time other than the hours that the court would be in session. Here you can see the diamond is to be contrasted with the diamond that in which Rav Huna said lafuke shelo bizman beisdin to low, and here we see v'afilu shelo bizman beisdin that you do blow. That's the question. The Gemara answers loi. Oilum bizman beisdin. It has to be in the morning hours, just like Rav Huna said. So that the expression ish ubeso means a person blows even in his house, but it has to be in the morning hours. Mosiv Rav Sheshes. Take note that this is a very long question, a lot of Gemara, before we get to the main point of the question. But he, Rav Sheshes, raises a question. Again, Rav Huna spoke about a limitation that the shofar blowing must be in the morning hours. We're going to show how, from in this question, that that's not so. Mosiv Rav Sheshes. Shove ha-yovel le-Rosh Hashanah le-Tkia u-le-Brachos. Yovel and Rosh Hashanah are similar with regard to laws regarding the shofar and laws regarding the makeup of the Shmoneh Esrei, the Shmoneh Esrei of Rosh Hashanah and the Shmoneh Esrei of Yovel Yom Kippur of Yovel year. However, there are differences. Ela shebe yovel toikin bein bebeizdin shekidshu boi es hachidesh u bein bebeizdin shelo kidshu boi es hachidesh. With regard to the Yovel shofar blowing, it will be blown whether it's a court of the Sanhedrin, that's the court that's charged with sanctifying months, and even in courts that don't sanctify months. The chol, and another point about the Yovel is, the chol yochid v'yochid chayav l'tkoa, private people are obligated to blow. U'b'Rosh Hashanah, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah though, regarding these two points, lo hoyu toikin elo b'beisin shekidshu boi es hachodesh. When Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah coincide, there is shofar blown only in the high court, the court that is responsible for sanctifying months. V'ein kol yochid v'yochid chayav l'tkoa, and private people do not blow in their homes. Mai ein kol yochid v'yochid chayav l'tkoa. What does that expression really mean, that private people do not blow? Elamon, again, we have the marking highlighting the stages of analysis. Double underline. Elamon de biyovel toikin yechidim ubu Rosh Hashanah ein toikin yechidim. If the source is trying to tell me that on Yovel, private people blow, and in Rosh Hashanah, private people don't blow. That's not true, though. And this we saw earlier. When Rav Yitzchak came, he told us, when the Shliach Tzibur finished his shofar blowing on Yavne on a Rosh Hashanah, on a Rosh Hashanah of Shabbos, lo shoma inish kol une, person couldn't hear his own voice, mikol tkuei dechidoi, from the shofar blowings of the individuals. So we see that on Rosh Hashanah also individuals blew shofar. Elolav, the ilu. So what is the meaning of the source? Elolav, the ilu, b'yoyvel, toikin, bein bizman beisdin, bein shelo bizman beisdin. When it comes to the yovel, so the private people would blow even in the afternoon hours. U'b'Rosh Hashanah, bizman beisdin in, shelo bizman beisdin lo. When it comes to Rosh Hashanah, which is in contrast to Yovel, so the blowing would only be in the morning hours. even though we're talking about private people blowing, but it's limited to the morning hours and not afterwards. Kotoni mihas, it however says here, notice the diamond, we're highlighting now the head, the question comes to a head over here. Kotoni mihas biyoivel, bain bizman basin, we dashed underline, bain shaloi bizman basin. Contrast this with what we have in the diamond just before this, right before, or the diamond where Rav Huna made his point. What did Rav Huna say? Shelo bizman bezdin lo. Here we see that on Yovel, which is what Rav Huna was addressing, and here we see when it comes to Yovel, even shelo bizman bezdin, there is shofar blowing. Lo li'oilom bizman bezdin. The shofar blowing is limited to the morning hours, like Rav Huna said. The Hochi Kotoni, and thusly, we are to understand the source in which we saw Yovel contrasted with Rosh Hashanah. But Yovel bizman beizdin toikin bain bifnei beizdin bain shelo bifnei beizdin. On Yovel, shofar blowing of the private people, the Yochid kol Yochid v'Yochid, would blow whether in the presence of Beizdin or not in the presence of Beizdin. Rosh Hashanah toikin bizman Beizdin ubifnei Beizdin, and on Rosh Hashanah, shofar blowing was in the morning hours and also limited to being in the presence of the court. But either way you look at it, shofar blowing was limited to bizman Beizdin, which is the main point that Rav Huna had made. Itmar Nami, we have similar to Rav Huna, this following statement, on Rav Chia Bar Gamdom, Rav Yossi Ben Shaul, Omar Rebbe, Ein Toikin, private people on Yom Kippur of Yovel, are not going to blow, Elo Kol Zman Shebeizdin Yoshvin, only when Beizdin is in session. And then, there could be blowing throughout the city, but it's limited to, as we saw under Rav Huna, that it's bizman beizdin. Boy, Rebbe Zera, nina rulamoid velo amdumahu. When speaking about the time for shofar blowing is until beizdin finishes their session at noon and they go home. What is the status of the time-wise if the court? Ninaru lamo, they started to shuffle in, they shuffled in their seats, starting to get up to go home. Rashi says, Nekru mi moishavam, kedei lamod velelech. But they didn't, they started moving around in their seats, but they didn't actually get up. Ninaru lamod velo omdu mahu. Based in Yoshvin bo'inon vo'iko, do we require them to be seated? And they are seated, they're still physically seated. They're just shuffling, they're moving to get up, but they're still seated. So you could still blow the shofar. Oy dilma, zman based in bo'ina v'leka. Or is it a function of the hour of the day, the clock, literally the time of basin? And since they are shuffling in their seats to get up, the time has passed. It's no longer time for basin to sit in session, and we're lacking that. And then, hence, if you are focusing purely on the clock and not their physical posture of being seated, then it would be too late to blow teku. So this remains unresolved. And if you look back in the Mishnah, you can see there were 4 points that Yerushalayim was described as having this additional realm of advantage over Yavna on four points regarding area or surrounding areas. And in our Gemara, we've underlined the words from the Mishnah. If you are Ro'eh, if you are Ro'eh Yerushalayim, Prat, Yerushalayim means you can see Jerusalem, Prat Yerushalayim Benachal, as opposed to a place that's in a valley at the, we'll call the foothills of Yerushalayim. People who are familiar with the topography know that Jerusalem sits atop a hill and there's a sharp drop outside the walls of the city of Jerusalem, a sharp drop into a valley. So you could be relatively close to Jerusalem, but you don't even see it because you're deep in the valley. So that place would not blow on Shabbos. Shomas, it has to do with hearing. Prat liyosheves barosh ahar, as opposed to a city that might be, or a locale that's on a mountain facing Jerusalem. They see Jerusalem, but they don't hear it because of their altitude. Krova, it has to be near Jerusalem. Prat liyosheves chutz l'tchum, as opposed to a city that is beyond 2,000 amos. Chutz l'tchum means beyond the tchum distance. Tchum is 2,000 amos, roughly a kilometer away. So a place that's more than a kilometer away would not blow on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, even though it's in the Jerusalem vicinity, but it's more than 2,000 amos, more than 1 kilometer. V'yachola lavo prat lemafsik lo nara, as opposed you have to also have the ability to come to Jerusalem, as opposed to if there were a river between you and Yerushalayim, so you couldn't physically get to Jerusalem. Therefore, you would not blow on Shabbos. We continue with a new Mishnah, and on the side we have under the topic heading the Nosei Shnei Takonos Shel Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Mishechara Beis HaMikdash, two rulings of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai at the time regarding the time period after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Number one, Netilas Lulav Kol Shiva B'Medina, the taking of the Lulav all 7 days, something that we are familiar with. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and if you look in the Torah, the taking of the Lulav was done only on the first day of Sukkot for people outside the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, the Lulav was taken all 7 days after the temple was destroyed. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai instituted that in order to remember the Beis HaMikdash, a memorial, if you will, Zecher LeMikdash, we outside of Jerusalem, meaning there's no more Beis HaMikdash, so we will now do what they used to do in the Beis HaMikdash and take the Lulav all 7 days of Sukkot. Number two, Shiyoyim Honef Kulo Oser. The second takona that he makes has to do with the Omer and Chodosh. So just a word about this. As far as the Torah is concerned, grains that grow in the wintertime, we'll call the New Year's, the New Season's grains, are forbidden until the Omer offering was offered in the Beis HaMikdash. The Omer is a barley grain offering, barley flour. It's a processed barley meal offering that's offered on the 16th of Nisan in the Beis HaMikdash. Once that grain offering was put on the altar, the population could then partake of the new grains. Once there is no Beis HaMikdash, so there's no grain offering, when will the new grains become mutter? So the Gemara debates this issue. You'll see a couple of opinions. What is the din d'oraisa, and what is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai attempting to do? But bottom line, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai instituted that the new grains will be forbidden to the public the entire 16th of Nisan. Whereas during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, we'll say at noontime when the Korban, the Minchas Omer was offered, you would then be able to partake of the new grains. Now that there's no Beis HaMikdash, the whole 16th day is rendered forbidden. And this is something that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had addressed. Let us now learn the Mishnah, and the Gemara will elaborate. Barishona Hoya Halulov Nita B'Mikdash Shiva V'Medina Yom Echad. Originally, the lulav was taken in the Beis HaMikdash all 7 days, but outside the Beis HaMikdash only 1 day. The pasuk says, "Ulekachtem lochem b'yoyim harishon," you shall take on the first day the different varieties that the Torah enumerates, the lulav, etc. Mishachora Beis HaMikdash, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, she lulav nita b'medina shiva zecher l'mikdash. With the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai ruled that the lulav shall be taken all 7 days, all over, as a memorial or a remembrance of what used to be done in the Beis HaMikdash. And a second ruling, v'shiyehe yom honeif kulo aser. Honeif has to do with the waving of the meal offering, physical waving of the meal offering that took place in the Beis HaMikdash, made the 16th of Nisan referred to as the yom honeif, the day of waving. So that day, the 16th of Nisan, which is the second day of Pesach, was ruled as being completely the whole day forbidden in eating the new grains. Before the Gemara gets into the issue of the Yom Honeif, the Gemara focuses on the issue of how do we know that there is importance or significance in memorializing the Beis HaMikdash. Uminolon di avdinon zecher l'mikdash. From where do we know that there is need to remember, to do something in order to recall, to remember the Beis HaMikdash? And by the way, not just the taking of lulav all 7 days, but there are many other practices that we have to fulfill this idea of Zecher Lamikdash, remembering the Beis HaMikdash. So even though the Beis HaMikdash most unfortunately and most tragically remains lying in ruins, at least as of this recording, our firm hope is that by the time you're listening to this, the Beis HaMikdash will already be rebuilt. But in the meantime, even though it lies in ruins, we remain deeply attached to the Beis HaMikdash, and we do things in order to strengthen that bond that we call Zecher LaMikdash. And so where do we know that there is such a such an entity or such an idea of making Zecher LaMikdash? The Omar Krol, the Pasuk says, Ki ele aruko loch umimakoisayach er poech neum Hashem, ki nidocha koru loch Tzion hi doresh ein la. The pasuk from Yirmiyahu, Perek Lamed Pasuk Yud Zayin, describes the Kodesh Baruch Hu eventually healing the Jewish people, being that we're now in a time of ruination and being cast out, and no one seeks out Zion, is what the end of the pasuk says. Sion hi doresh ein la, and there's no one seeking it out. A type of cry, bemoaning that there is no one seeking it out. Michlau de bayodrisha. So from this we infer that it is something that needs to be sought out, and we accomplish that by doing things that recall and recount that which took place in the Beis HaMikdash. Specifically, the taking of the lulav nowadays all 7 days, something that was done only in the Beis HaMikdash when it was around. V'shiyeh yom honeif kulo aser, and we said that the 16th of Nisan, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, after the temple's destruction, is completely forbidden in the eating of the new grains. Whereas, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, no later than noon of the 16th, the Korban Omer will have already been offered. After the Beis HaMikdash, the balance of the day from noon onwards remains forbidden. Before we continue in the Gemara text, there is some structural activity taking place, and on the side we have the Nosei Mivneh heading. We introduce the topic with a structural note. You notice the crown shape? These represent Tshuvos LaSheila. These are responses to the question, Lama Ne'esru Kol, Lama Ne'esar Kol Yom Honeif. Why is the entire 16th actually forbidden? The Gemara, Mai Taima. Why was it saw why was it seen fit to restrict the entire 16th in consuming the new grains? The Gemara answers, Mehero Yibona Beis Hamikdash. This, by the way, as we said, is approach number one. Approach number two, you can see at the last line of this omid. Mehero Yibona Beis Hamikdash. The fervent hope that's in all of our minds all the time is that the Beis Hamikdash will be rebuilt immediately, quickly. And so now you're going to have a situation where the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt. V'yomru, and people will say, Eshtaked mi lo ochalnu beheir mizrach. If you go according to what appears in the Torah, and this we didn't speak about before, it appears from the Torah, according to this number one approach, that if there is no Omer being offered, there's no Beis HaMikdash, so with the breaking of dawn of the 16th of Nisan, actually earlier in the day, you can eat the new grains. So if people, let us say, got used to eating at the break of dawn the new grains, and then 1 year, hopefully soon, the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. The nature of people is to follow, continue their practices, their habits, if you will, and rely on their practice up to that point. There's a problem, though. When the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, the heter, the permission of eating the new grains, is no longer dependent on the breaking of dawn of the 16th, but rather the offering of the meal offering that takes place later in the morning. You can't eat the new grains until the grain offering is offered when you have a Beis HaMikdash. So the problem that the Mishnah is addressing is a situation where the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, and people will say, if they got into the habit of eating grains on the Doraisa level at the break of dawn, they will say, well, Eshtaked, last year, when there was no Beis HaMikdash, Milo Achalnu Beheir Mizrach, did we not eat at the crack of dawn? Achshav Nami Necho. Now, too. Great, there's a Beis HaMikdash, but the time for partaking of the new grains is at the break of dawn? The Lo Yadi. And they're not going to know, Eshtaked Lo Hava Oimer. Last year, when there was no Omer offering, the Omer is that barley meal offering, Heir Mizrach Hittir, the break of dawn allows for the eating of the new grains based on a pasuk in the Torah. Hashta, De'ika Omer, and this is what they don't realize now, that there is an Omer, Omer Matir. It's the grain offering that allows, that's Matir, that creates permission for the eating of the new grains, and that's only later in the morning. The Gemara continues analyzing what exactly on a practical basis, what exactly is the scenario that will cause our worries. The Mivni Amas. When is this rebuilding going to take place that will cause us to be worried, as we just explained? We have a trapezoid or volcano marking that's featured on the side. Nisyonos lanos l'shelo demivni emas. These are attempts to answer the question of this: when will the Beis HaMikdash be rebuilt? That this will cause us to have concern. Demivni emas ilemo diivni b'shitzar. If you're talking about a situation that the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt on the 16th of Nisan, Hare Heir Mizrach Hitir, the crack of dawn came about before there was a Beis HaMikdash. So that even if it's rebuilt later in the day, at the crack of dawn there was still no Beis HaMikdash, they were allowed to eat at the crack of dawn. Ela, the Ivni B'chamesa. By the way, if anyone's wondering about no Beis HaMikdash at crack of dawn, but later in the day there is a Beis HaMikdash. How could that be? What, in a couple hours the whole thing is rebuilt? So Rashi tells us something, and you can see the very last last few words on this page, which we've dashed underline, where Rashi says, "Avol binyan ha'osid lovoi bidei shomayim hu." As far as Rashi is concerned, the third temple is going to descend from heaven, completely constructed, so that the issue of time needed to build the Beis HaMikdash isn't a factor in this particular discussion. Something of a miraculous nature figures into this discussion, and again, we're learning according to Rashi in this Gemara. So we continue. So if the rebuilding that is on our minds is a rebuilding on the 16th of Nisan, but at the crack of dawn there was still no Beis HaMikdash, so they have all the right to eat at the crack of dawn. Ela, de'ivni, b'chamesar. Maybe the Beis HaMikdash will be reconstructed on the 15th of Nisan. So what does that mean for us? If you have a Beis HaMikdash on the 15th of Nisan, when the 16th moves in, so we know that we have to, or the halacha is, at least, not that people knew, but the halacha is that you have to wait for the Omer offering. Okay, so I'll wait for the Omer. When is the Omer offering? It's not offered any later than noontime. So wouldn't it have been sufficient for Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to rule as follows? Mechatzos hayom ulahalon lishteri. Why did he forbid the entire 16th from eating of the new grains? Let him have made a ruling that the new grains are forbidden just till noon. But from noon onwards, partake of the new grains. The Hotnan, Horachoikim, Mutar Mechatzos Hayom Ulahalon. People were far away from the Beis HaMikdash, didn't see the actual offering of the Omer. They can partake of the new grains from noontime onwards. The Fishain Basin Miss Atzlin Boy. Basin is not so lazy as to delay the offering of the Omer beyond noon. So, would it not have been sufficient for Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, when making a ruling concerning Yom HaNeif, to say that only the morning hours are forbidden? And what's the, we'll call it the worst case scenario, is that a Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt and people are going to worry, they're going to fall back on their practices of last year when there was no Beis HaMikdash. So what will happen? They'll start eating from noon onwards. Okay, now that there is a Beis HaMikdash, no problem. The Omer will have already been offered. So why did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai forbid the entire 16th of Nisan? Loi nitzercha. So here we're at finally the third stage of analysis. The timing of the rebuilding is as follows. The ivni b'chamesar somach l'shkias hachamo inami the ivni b'layla. If the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt on the 15th as sunset arrives, or sometime in the night between the 15th and 16th, you see, you will have a Beis HaMikdash, but there isn't enough time to get the barley grains ready and qualified or eligible for being offered. There's a procedure that has to take place when you go from the fresh grains, from cutting the fresh grains, till they're dried out and fit for a meal offering. And in the few hours that you would have from the night of the 16th till the morning hours of the 16th, within those few hours, they won't be able to have the grain, the meal offering, the barley meal offering ready. When will it be offered? It'll be offered probably in the late afternoon of the 16th, the last few hours of the daytime. So And in such a case where the Beis HaMikdash is there before the crack of dawn of the 16th, so they can't rely on eating it on the Torah level at the crack of dawn. They are obligated to wait for the grain offering, the barley offering of the Omer to be offered. And in that year that the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, the Omer offering won't be offered by noon. It'll be offered later in the day. So, in anticipation of that happening, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai took preemptive measures and said that when there's no Beis HaMikdash, get used to being prohibited from the new grains the entire 16th day. So that in the event that the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt the night of the 16th, people, when the 16th day comes around, they won't be eating the new grains all day. And those who are lucky to see the actual meal offering being offered late in the day, fine, they'll be able to eat it at that point. People who don't see it will still be fine. Their old minhag of not eating the new grains all of the 16th and will not fall, not stumble on an isur, on a prohibition. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok has another approach. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Beshitas, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Beshitas Rabbi Yehuda Omra. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in saying, or in being presented in the Mishnah, is following the theory or the idea echoed by the Tana Rebbe Yehuda, the Omar, who says, Ad etzem hayoyim hazev, the Torah that prohibits the partaking of new grains nowadays, when there's no Beis HaMikdash, the grains are also ad etzem hayoyim hazev, until this very day. Now, the day referred to as the 16th of Nisan. And what does that mean, ad until the 16th? Ad atzmoi shel yoim, until the very day itself. The kosavar ad, and he's of the opinion that when the Torah uses the word ad, until, it means until and including. The ad bichlal, until the 16th, means until and including the 16th, there is a prohibition. This second approach then is stating, quite differently than the first approach, that the Torah prohibits the new grains until the 17th of Nisan. In other words, when there's no Beis HaMikdash, according to this second approach, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is telling you that the Torah prohibits the new grains throughout the entire Yom Honeif, the entire 16th of Nisan. This, by the way, is in contrast with the first approach, where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai introduced a rabbinic restriction concerning the 16th, where the Torah was understood to have said that until the 16th, the old grains are also until but not including the 16th, and hence at the crack of dawn, from the Torah level, according to the first version in this Gemara, from the crack of dawn of the 16th, the new grains would already be allowed. In the second Lashon that we're doing right now, the second version, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok's version, the new grains are usher in the non-Beis HaMikdash era from the Torah standpoint the entire 16th. And this is an idea that the Tana, Rebbe Yehuda, popularized through his drasha of ad etzem hayom hazeh, ad atzmoy shel yom, holding ad ve'ad bichlal. The Gemara now asks, Umi sovar lo kavosei? Does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai really hold by Rabbi Yehuda? Does he hold like Rabbi Yehuda? For mifleg poligole. It would seem from the following source that he argues. Disnan, we have now a following source. Mishechora Beis HaMikdash, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, from the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai instituted She Yom Honeif Kulo Aser, that the entire Yom Honeif, the day of waving, the 16th of Nisan, is forbidden in partaking of the new grains. Om Rabbi Yehuda, reacts to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai and says, "Valo mina Torah hu aser." What do you mean, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, which implies that he through rabbinic ruling instituted that it's aser? The Torah itself asers. The Torah itself prohibits the 16th. Dichtiv ad etzem hayoyim hazeh, until the very day, up till and including the 16th, the Torah prohibits. So how can the Gemara say, or how can, as we saw, this second approach, as Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok said, that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai adopts Rabbi Yehuda's approach, when you see that Rabbi Yehuda argues with Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai? The Gemara explains, Hosam Rabbi Yehuda hu dekotoi. Rabbi Yehuda, in addressing Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai in the source we just read, is actually Rabbi Yehuda making a mistake. Ihu Sova, Rabbi Yehuda thought, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai midurabonin komar, that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai spoke about the 16th of Nisan as being usher in the new grains on a rabbinic level. Velohi, and that's not so. Mida oiraisa komar, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was speaking on a Torah level. The Gemara says, how can you say that? Well, he iskin kotoni. Hiskin means he ruled, he enacted. He enacted, not the Torah. The Gemara says, no. My hiskin, what does the word hiskin mean? Dorash the hiskin. It means he, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, he stated the pasuk. He taught the pasuk in public. Ad etzem hayom hazeh, until the very day, the 16th of Nisan, including the 16th of new grains of Asur, and through his public address, he was able to establish that people would follow this practice. Apparently, according to Rashi, until now, people were lax about that. And through his public lectures, public drushas, public address, where he featured the pasuk as the source of the 16th prohibition, the 16th day of Nisan, new grain prohibition, through his teaching of the pasuk, so people fell into place and understood that they cannot be lax about that. But bottom line, according to the second version, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is in accordance with what Rabbi Yehuda originally thought, that Rabbi Yehuda thought, or is of the opinion that the 16th is usher, is prohibited on a Torah level. Before we continue, we glance at the side. We have a new Mishnah, and on the side, we have written under our notes, say, the topic heading, Ad Mosai Mekablim Edus HaChodesh. Until what time of day do we accept the testimony of the witnesses? The witnesses announcing the new month. And the focus of our discussion will be concerning the witnesses that announce Rosh Hashanah. The mission itself speaks about accepting Edus HaChodesh all day. We continue in our introduction. So the first issue deals with up to what point in the day do we accept the Edus HaChodesh? And another issue is Niskaklu HaLevim Bashir. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when Korbonos were offered, so there were, at the time the public sacrifices were offered, there were passages from this, from Sefer Tehillim, different chapters that were recited. We call them Shir, sometimes translated as song, the Levian's song, that was recited. There was also musical instruments that accompanied this at the time that sacrifices were offered. Now, there are different shirim, there are different, we'll call it prokim, different chapters that are recited regarding different types of sacrifice. You have daily morning sacrifices, you've got musaf-type sacrifices for holiday occasions, you have afternoon sacrifices, Tomet Shobein Arabayim. Depending on what kind of day it is, and what type of korban it is, that will have an effect on what shir is going to be said. Now, the idea of the Levium messing up on the shir could arise in a situation where, if we take the first of Tishrei as an example, the first of Tishrei would be the day that is sometimes referred to also as the 30th of Elul, meaning once you count the 29 days of Elul, you anticipate the coming of witnesses that will testify about the new lunar phase having been seen. That testimony would take place on the day after the 29th, namely what we can call day 30, and if the witnesses do appear, day 30 then becomes day 1. And when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, for example, that's a holiday that has special holiday sacrifices, the afternoon sacrifice then becoming an afternoon holiday sacrifice as opposed to an afternoon weekday sacrifice. The difference being will be manifest in the shir, in the chapter that is to be recited. Now, what does Niskak Levim Bashir mean? Well, if the Levim, if the Edim tarry, they wait, they come very late in the day. It's so late in the day that the Tomid shall Beinu Arbayim will need to have been offered. And if when the witnesses show up afterwards, up till that point, they could have thought, well, the witnesses aren't going to show up this late in the day. It must be that it remains the 30th of Elul, a weekday, so we would recite the weekday shir. Lo and behold, the witnesses show up later in the day after they offered the Tomid Shel Beinu Arbayim, and it turns out to be a holiday. So retroactively, the shir issue is messed up. Exactly what the mess up was, you'll see there are two opinions in the Gemara as to what it means that they messed up. Did they simply remain silent because they were thinking the witnesses might come, or did they simply give up thinking the witnesses aren't coming? They went ahead and recited the weekday shir. But either way, they did not say the holiday shir for the Tomid Shel Beinu Arbayim. We should note parenthetically that as far as the morning, the Tomid Shel Shachar sacrifice, witnesses, generally speaking, did not come so early in the day, the time that the Tomid Shel Shachar was offered. So even on Rosh Hashanah, we call the first of Tishrei, the shir that would be recited would be a weekday shir. Another thing we should point out parenthetically is that after the 29th of Elul, the night after the 29th of Elul, that's a night that, out of doubt, the population celebrated or observed it already as if it were Rosh Hashanah, meaning they would not do melachos outside of Oichel Nefesh. They would observe it as if it were a holiday with holiday restrictions. This, of course, now we've learned, we're coming to the end of Masechus Rosh Hashanah, so a lot of these ideas we've discussed in the past, that at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the calendar was not something that was plastered to someone's wall, but rather depends on the testimony of witnesses. So people would wait. They would observe the from the night after the 29th as if it were a holiday, waiting for the witnesses to show up on the 30th. The case that we're focusing on right now of Niskag Levim Bashir is that the witnesses actually showed up on the 30th, but very late in the day, a time of day which was after they had already offered the Tomid Shel Beinu Arbayim. So there was a great deal of dismay. They had already offered the Tomid Shel Beinu Arbayim prior to the witnesses showing up, because they showed up so late in the day. So there was a problem regarding the shir that they said for that Tomid Shel Beinu Arbayim, because upon the appearance of the witnesses, then retroactively it's certified as a holiday. Then we have another point on the side. Takonis Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai Achara Churban Lekabel Edus Kol Hayom. Now, what we didn't mention is that as a result of Niskak Levim Bashir, a ruling was made at the time of the Beis HaMikdash that witnesses who show up later in the day we do not declare day 30 to be sanctified, and rather the next day that we call day 31 will turn into day 1 of Tishrei. Day 30 will be therefore considered a weekday, even though technically speaking they finished off the day with holiday practices or holiday restrictions, so as not to belittle that which they were doing up till that point. The Mishnah points out, though, that after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so they reverted to what originally was done, namely the acceptance of witnesses all day. There's no more issue of any retroactive mess-up of sacrifices because there's no more Beis HaMikdash. So there's no problem in accepting the witnesses on day 30 till the very end of the day. Now we turn to the Mishnah. Borishona, originally, hoyu mekablim edus ha-chodesh kol hayom. The Sanhedrin would accept the witnesses that testify about the new lunar phase all day. All day, we call day 30 of Elul, and upon the arrival of the witnesses at any point of the day, it will then flip over or convert into day 1 of Tishrei. Aleph Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah. Pamachas nishtoha edim milovoi. Once it happened that the witnesses tarried in coming, they came late in the day, v'niskaklu halavim bashir. And the Levim, who were charged with the shir, with the song, the recitation of chapters from Tehillim, there was a mess up. At the opening of the Gemara, you'll see the Gemara ask, "My kilkul kilkul Levim bashir." What was the mess up? So we're not going to commit ourselves to any pshat right now. But it once happened that witnesses came very late in the day, so late that they had already offered the afternoon Tumid, and that resulted in Niskalkalu Halavim Bashir Hiskinu. So there was a ruling, Shelo Yumekablim Elo Ad Hamincha. We will not accept the Edim testifying about the lunar cycle until we won't accept them any time after the offering of the Tumid Shel Bein Harbayim. Vimbo Edim min ha-mincha lamala, if they came from that time of day that we call mincha lamala, which might be in terms of at any time after noon, if they come in the afternoon hours, so we are not going to declare day 30 to be day 1. However, Noihagin Oisai Hayoim Kodesh, they will continue practicing that day as they were since the night before, as if it were holy. Ulamochar Kodesh, and the next day will certainly be Kodesh. The next day will be the formal Aleph Tishrei. Let's look at Rashi. Noihagin Oisai Hayoim Kodesh, Rosh Hashanah Koi, we're talking about the witnesses and accepting them on the 30th of Elul, which is potentially the first day of Tishrei, which is Rosh Hashanah. The Mishachashecha Lele, the Mishachoshcha Lele Esrim Vetisha, from the time of the night after the 29th of Elul, Nohagu Boi Kodesh. They observed already it as a day of holiness with activity restrictions. Shema Yavo Edim Mochar, the witnesses that cited the new lunar phase might show up, Vikachu Beisdin, and they will establish this day, day 30, as being a day 1 of Tishrei, a holy day. That's the date of Rosh Hashanah. V'nimtza shalaylo hazeh leil yom tov hu. And then retroactively, it will become clear that the night was also part of Yom Tov. The beginning of Yom Tov takes place at night. V'chein l'mochor kol hayom ad hamincha. And likewise, they would conduct themselves with holiday restrictions all day until noon, until afternoon. The im bo edim kodem hamincha, if witnesses would show up before the offering time of the afternoon sacrifice, based in mekadshim es hachodesh, Basin will sanctify the new month. The nodash yofanagabo kodesh, they will then see retroactively that it was very good that they were observing it with holiday restrictions. If the witnesses will show up after the mincha time, even though Basin will not accept them to sanctify the day 30 as a day 1, v'yavru or v'yabru es Elul, and they will rather extend Elul, so that day 30 will remain day 30 of Elul. Yavru is to extend. V'kashu l'mochar, and rather sanctify the next day. Day 31 will become day 1. Afal pikein goyimrim oisoi b'kedusha, nevertheless, that day 30 will be finished off in sanctity, activity restrictions. The osur b'malacha, it's forbidden to do malachas the balance of the day, even though we're not sanctifying it as a holiday. Dilma osi lezuei be l'shon haba, because if we were to allow mundane activities, weekday activities, at that point, v'yasu b'malacha kol hayom, whereas I just l'shon haba. Let's read that line again. Dilma osi lezuei be l'shon haba. They then come to treat things lightly next year. V'yasu b'malacha kol hayom. They'll do malacha all day. V'yom reshtakeinu hagnu boi kodesh chinam. Last year we observed it as a holy day for naught. From in the afternoon we treated it as a weekday. So next year they'll treat the whole day 30 as a weekday, and the witnesses might very well show up before noon, and that will then lead to a big mistake on the part of the public. So therefore, the Mishnah tells us that you have to observe, even if you don't accept the witnesses, you still have to observe the entire 30th as a day, the Isur Malacha, prohibited in engaging in constructive weekday activities. We now turn to the Gemara. Or let us more accurately continue with the Mishnah. Mishachora Beis HaMikdash, upon the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai Shu Mekablim Eidus HaChodesh Kol Hayom. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai instituted that will accept witnesses till the end of day 30. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, we saw that they made a takona not to accept witnesses in the afternoon hours, so as not to create a problem for the shear of the Tomid Shel Ben Arbaim, the afternoon daily sacrifice. If we don't accept witnesses, afternoon, even if they do come afternoon, we'll still then know to say the weekday shear Shel Korban. The Mishnah mentioned that it once happened that the Leviim messed up. That's the case where the witnesses came late in the day, after the time of the offering of the Tumid Shel Bein Harbayim. The Bein Harbayim, Tumid Shel Bein Harbayim, the having been offered prior to the coming of the witnesses. And when the witnesses showed up, so it became clear, retroactively evident, that there was a mess up. My Kilkul, Kilkulu Halaviyam Bashir. What was the nature of the mess up? Hocha Tergimu, here in Bavel, they explain Shalo Omru Shira Kol Iker. They remained silent. They were waiting and waiting and waiting, and they offered the Tumid Shel Bein Harbayim, and they, as a result of their doubt, when in doubt, remained silent. That was their approach. So that was the mess up, that they didn't say that they remained silent. Rabbi Zera Omar, Sheomru Shira Shel Choil in Tumid Shel Bein Harbayim. The mess up was that they said the wrong shear. the witnesses came, albeit late in the day, but retroactively, this was at the original point before any takana was made, retroactively, it becomes a holiday. They didn't see the witnesses at the time of the offering of the... The witnesses had not shown up at the time of the offering of the Tumah Shel Bar and Bayam. So what did they do? They said the weekday shear. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, we have a structural issue to deal with. You'll see how triangles appear in two directions. And on the side of the Gemara, we have an introduction. We have a nosei, which we didn't read before, but we spoke it out. Let's read it now. Shnei deos, well, there are two opinions, which we just saw. B'mahu hakilku b'mishnah b'mikre shebo edim achar amincha. What was the mess-up featured in the Mishnah in the case that the witnesses had come, the witnesses that had seen the new lunar phase, they came late in the day. So the Mishnah said there was a mess-up. V'niskaklu avim b'shir. Number one, lo omru klal. There was no shir said at all. Number two, omru shir shel choyl. They said the wrong shear. Structurally, under the Mivneh, we have a triangle featured, which is, in this case, a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the back and forth nature of the Gemara. The triangle with the point facing up are kushos al number one, hadea shelo amru klal. We're going to be challenging that approach, that they have remained silent. And the flipped over triangle are two as responses. So now the Gemara. Omar lo Rabbi Zera li Ahava. This is a name, Bray, of Rabbi Zera's son. Rabbi Zera named his son, or his son's name was Ahava. Poik Toni Lahu. Rabbi Zera said, go and teach them the following Tanaic source, the following Brysa, which Rabbi Zera is, of course, hoping will prove his point, that the mess-up was a mess-up of saying the wrong thing, as opposed to silence. So Rabbi Zera tells his son, go tell them the following source, Hiskinu shlo yu mekabel meidus achodesh, elo kedesh yesheus biyom lahakriv tamidim umusafim v'niskehem. They instituted in the Beis HaMikdash that they shall not receive witnesses unless there is enough time after the witnesses to process these sacrifices, the daily sacrifice, the tamidim, the musafim, the additional sacrifices, v'niskam, and their accompanying offerings of wine and flour. V'loimar shira shelo b'shibush, and to also be able to say the appropriate shear without messing up. So what was the concern? The concern, or what motivated this limitation in the time of the Beis HaMikdash as to up till when you can accept the witnesses? What motivated is that they should not end up saying a shira in a mess up fashion. He amris bishlamo omur shira dechoyol. If you say, like I said, says Rabbi Zera, that their mess up was they said the wrong shear, they said the weekday shear, hainu deiko shibush, that's called a mess up. Eloi amris lo omur klal. But if you say, like the first approach, that there was no shear, they out of doubt they simply remained silence, my shibush iko, what's the mess up? The Gemara answers, cave on the lo omur klal, since they remained silent, ein lochos shibush godol mizeh. That's the ultimate mess up. A korban is supposed to have shear, and they didn't say a shear. That's called messing things up. So that Rabbi Zera, at this point, is not successful in challenging his opponent's opinion by citing this source. The source says that the takono is made to avoid what otherwise would be a mess up. And what's that mess up? Remaining silent. Mosin, again, another triangle. This introduces a very long question. It takes you to the end of the Omid. Only at the top of the next moment will there be an answer. So, Rav Mosiv Rav Acha Barhuna. Rav Acha quotes a Tanaic source. This source is rather long. It takes you to the fourth line from the bottom. And once again, you'll see that the Gemara there says, Iyamris Bishma, if you say that like Rabbi Zera says, then this source will make sense. Otherwise, the source will be hard to understand. So Rav Acha says, it says as follows, Tomid Shel Rosh Hashanah Shachris, the daily sacrifice, the Tomid Shel Shachar, on Rosh Hashanah, Korev Kil Chosoi. It's offered as it would be any time of the year, meaning the Shir Shel Chol was recited. We pointed this out earlier, that witnesses, generally speaking, never came that early in the morning, so that there was no the fear or the doubt that maybe witnesses are going to show up and convert it into a holy day requiring a different shear was simply something that would not have taken place that early in the day. So they continued the standard shear shel chol for the shachris tomid shel shachar, the morning Rosh Hashanah offering. But musaf mahu omer, what's the musaf paragraph or chapter to say? It's from Tehillim Perik Pei Aleph, Harninu Lelokim Uzenu Horiru Leloke Yankiv. In this pasuk, in this chapter, you see Horiu is similar to the word trua, which is associated with shofar blowing, so it's appropriate for Rosh Hashanah. We want to say something now that will be important in a couple lines from now, but one should realize that this chapter, Pei Aleph, Harninu Lelukim Uzenu Horilu Leken Yankiv, this was also the standard Thursday Shir Shel Shachris. We spoke about this earlier, that there was the when you're dealing with the standard weekday, there was a different shear for each day of the week. In fact, we commemorate this in our prayers, in our davening at the end of Shacharis. We also say what we call the Shir Shel Yom, which commemorates, as the opening line says, Hashir Shehoyu Halvim Oimrim Beveis HaMikdash. So this paragraph that serves as the shear of the Musaf, the additional Rosh Hashanah public sacrifice, also happened to be the same chapter that one would say on a standard Thursday weekday. That's, we're saying that as a side point. We'll come back to it later. But Mincha Ma'u Omer, what about the Mincha, the Tomet Shelbein Arbayim sacrifice shir, Kol Hashem Yochil Midbar, chapter 29 of Tehillim. ובזמן שחל ראש השונה להיות בחמישי בשבס שהשירו שלו הרנינו ללכים וזינו. And on, in a case where Rosh Hashanah comes out on a Thursday, and Rashi adds, and witnesses came very early in the day, witnesses came before the Tomid Shel Shachar. So they came on a Thursday very early in the morning. The standard Thursday Shira was Harninu Lelekei Muzenu. So what would now... What did they do now? Again, Thursday, we said that on a standard Thursday, you would say Harninu Lelekei Muzenu, which also happened to be the Musaf Shir of Rosh Hashanah. So what are they going to do now? It's Thursday, very early in the morning. Lo hoya oimer b'shachris harninu. They wouldn't start from the beginning of that chapter. Why not? V'nei shechoyzer v'koyfel boi v'koyfel es haperek. If they're going to say from the beginning of that chapter, straight off in the morning, they're going to end up doubling it again later in the day. Because that is what you have to say as part of the Musaf sacrifice. El Amau Omer. So what would he say in Shacharis of Rosh Hashanah coming out on a Thursday and witnesses coming very early in the morning, he would say, the Levium would say, Hasi Roisi Misevel Shichmoi. Truth be told, this is the chapter Pei Aleph, Posuk Zayin. In other words, they would not start from the beginning of Perek Pei Aleph for the Shachris Shir. They would say from Posuk Zayin till the end. And then we have to fill in over here, and it seems then that for the Musaf Shir, they would say from the beginning of Perek Aleph, Perek Pei Aleph, from Pasuk Aleph till Pasuk Vav. So there's no doubling. In the morning, they started from Pasuk Zayin till the end, and in the Musaf, which was later in the day, they would say the beginning of that chapter, from Pasuk Aleph till Pasuk Vav. So there's no doubling. Ve'im bo edim achar tomid shel shachar. Let's say you've got a Rosh Hashanah Thursday situation, and the witnesses come like the usual would come after the tomid shel shachar, later in the morning, so that the daily morning sacrifice was offered with the standard shir shel choyl. Omer harninu, he will say harninu perek pei aleph from the beginning, afapi shechoyzer v'koyfel es haperek, even though the result of that is going to be a doubling of that chapter being recited again during Musaf. So what do we see in this scenario? We see a situation where there's an element of doubt. And how do you behave when there is doubt? Iyamers bishlamo kol hecho demistapko. If you say that where there's an element of doubt, Amrinon Shira Dechoil, you would say the weekday shir, Hainu Dekomar Oimroi Vekoifloi. So that's what the source is describing. You're going to say Thursday morning for the Tomet Shel Shachar, the chapter Pei Aleph from the beginning, and you're going to double it again. So when there's an element of doubt, as is the case with the Tomet Shel Shachar of a Thursday morning potential Rosh Hashanah day, you say the weekday shir. So when there's doubt, say the weekday shir. Is that not this, that? And that's what we saw in the Mishnah's case. The witnesses came very late in the day, so there was an element of doubt throughout the day what to do. So Rabbi Zeira had said, you know what they said? They said the weekday shir. There's an element of doubt. You say the weekday shir, just like you see in this Tanaic source. Elohi Amris lo omur klal. But if, as you in Bavel said, the number one pirush, the number one explanation, that when there's doubt they remain silent, so in this source also there was an element of doubt. It was it's Thursday, the 30th of Elul. It could turn into a holiday. So when there's an element of doubt and there's this fear of it being doubled, according to you, so you would have remained silent, but that's not what it said in the source. My omro v'koflo. What does it mean in the source when it teaches that they would say it and end up doubling it? According to your approach, when there's an element of doubt, you remain silent. There wouldn't be any doubling. So they will answer, and this is at the top of Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, Shiny Hossam. That case is different. The case of Thursday morning, what should you do regarding the Shira? We too would agree that there you'll say Harninu, say chapter Pei Aleph, Shiny Hossam. That case is different. The Shira de Yomei Hi. That is the official Thursday shir anyway. Rashi at the top, Shiny Hosam Deshira de Yomehi, the Li'oilam in general, Kolhecha de Mestapka Milsa, where there's an element of doubt, Kagon Bamincha, like the afternoon daily sacrifice, the I Hayoim Kodesh, Lo Shayach Lememar de Choil, that if today turns out to be a holy day, you can't say the weekday Shir, V'i Hu Choil, Lo Shayach Lememar de Kodesh. And if it's a weekday, you can't say the holiday Shir. So when there's that kind of doubt, lo aminu klal, one will remain silent. V'hacha, in this case, the case of the Thursday morning harninu issue, hainu taima de omar shiro de choyel b'chamishi b'shabas, the reason that they did say, proactively recited the Thursday tomashol shachar shir of harninu, de shiro de yomei, he. That is the expected shir anyway. Shir haroi leimar leomer hayom hu. It's expected. It's normal for that Thursday chapter pei aleph shir to be said. Vafilu b'Rosh Hashanah ne'emeras shiras hachol b'chol tumidei hashachar. Every Rosh Hashanah, every year Rosh Hashanah, they would say the weekday shir in the tumid shel shachar. If the witnesses came very early in the day, so then they would switch it. However, when there's doubt, when the witnesses didn't come so early in the day, because of the fear of doubling something, that would be the worst thing that happens if they say it doubled. So because there's an element of doubt, that's not going to prevent us from saying the Thursday morning, the Tomid Shel Shachar Shira. And just to go over what Rashi said and add our twist to it, because when it comes to the Tomid Shel Shachar morning Shir, as Rashi pointed out, the morning the Tomid Shel Shachar of every year Rosh Hashanah, you generally speaking said the Shir Shel Chol anyway. Just because on a Thursday, where Rosh Hashanah coincides with a Thursday, there is an element of doubt that it might turn into a holy day. And then what would happen? You'll end up having said that chapter Pei Aleph twice. That's not enough to prevent us from our general practice of reciting the Shir Shel Chol that is for Thursday anyway, chapter Pei Aleph. The fear only being that it'll be doubled. That's not enough of a consideration to prevent us from saying it in the morning. But as far as the Tomid Shel Bein or Abayim Shir, where it's an absolutely wrong Shir, if it turns out to be a holy day, our practice is that where there's an element of doubt, the witnesses might still come, don't say anything. And that was the Niskalkalu, because they didn't say anything and witnesses did show up, leading to the original Takona not to accept witnesses from past noontime, the time that's appropriate for offering the Tomid Shel Bein or Abayim. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, especially in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.